1903 brings us to the unusual church of Kilcooley, tucked away in the estate, yet very much a public place. And of course, and this will connect with connections with the medieval Irish church that I'm about to mention. It is very much associated with the Cistercian Abbey of Kilcooley, so testifies to great continuity of worship and a rhythm of prayer. One of the delightful things about the Irish Cistercians, apart from their splendid architecture, was that in the context of that very architecture, the Cistercian order loved to think it was rather austere and built very chaste buildings that were eloquent but relatively unadorned. In Ireland, the local Cistercians could never cope with this. The Irish imagination needed to run riot in the context of architecture, and the Irish Cistercian abbeys tend to be decorated with all sorts of imaginative carvings of animals and foliage and so on. And I suppose this is a day when we think of Kilcooley and similar contexts and give thanks for and pray for the artistic imagination, how it's not only beautiful, but sometimes artistic imagination takes us to places and insights that theologians themselves haven't quite got to. Back to 1903, and thinking of ancient times. By statute in that year, statute of Westminster, St. Patrick's Day became a bank holiday. Parliament was recognising that within the then United Kingdom, Ireland needed a kind of national day. And that's worth remembering in its foundations, for it's very much with us still. Of course, COVID caused great dislocation of it this present year, and it'll be interesting to see what it's like next year. But it's fascinating how St. Patrick's Day, originally a religious festival and then a public holiday, has evolved. And there was some resentment in the, as it were, the Protestant North when St. Patrick's Day was defined as a holiday, because it was perceived as potentially celebrating a kind of separatist Irishness, of wrapping the flag around people and taking a certain political, making certain political assumptions, whereas it's meant to be a uniting day for all Irish people. And of course, originally, it was simply a welcome extra day for workers who got very little guaranteed time off. St. Patrick's Day was a well-established public holiday by the time of the events of 1932, when Ireland commemorated 1,500 years since the arrival of Patrick. And in 1932, rival denominations, instead of wanting to share Patrick and celebrate him together, there was no ecumenism then, as it were, rival denominations seemed to want to rival each other in their ownership of Patrick. To be honest, the Church of Ireland had voices which said, had Patrick lived in the 20th century, he'd certainly have been a Protestant. We, the Church of Ireland, are the people who are the custodians of his place of burial. We're going to build a commemorative church at Saul, just in the idiom that we had, would have, that he would have loved. Now, unfortunately, in our time, not that many go to church on St. Patrick's Day. And we wonder how we might use a national festival, which is also a religious event, to connect the claims of faith imaginatively, using that word again as the Cistercians would have done, imaginatively and powerfully to the Ireland we know and serve. And that, of course, is also the challenge of Disestablishment 150, the imaginative and fresh reconnection of an ancient narrative. Perhaps the fact that all the parades and so on had to stop last year and possibly again next year gives us space to think of how we reconnect the authentic Patrick to his nation in these times. And I also wish, as we review the symbols and the events of St. Patrick's Day, that despite the efforts of Aer Lingus and others, that I also wish, and I don't want to wish to criticise the wonderful Patrick all these years later, I sometimes wish that we'd a more exciting national emblem than the shamrock, which actually helps us only very modestly to comprehend the mystery of the eternal Trinity.